This podcast is an initiative of the Australian Intercollegiate Meat Judging Association to showcase the career paths within the meat processing industry. ICMJ is a not-for-profit association which aims to provide opportunities for students to learn, building the pool of intelligent young meat industry representatives into the future. ICMJ does this through a series of events across Australia and overseas. For more information, head to the website icmj.com.au. Jason Strong is the Managing Director of Meat and Livestock Australia, known as the MLA, Australia's meat industry marketing and research body that is funded by producer levies, the federal government, and industry stakeholder investment. Mr. Strong's career has taken him around the world and to work for some of Australia's largest meat processing businesses, a path he was put on by an early introduction to meat judging. I'm Amy McCosker, and I started my discussion with Jason Strong by asking him where his interest in the beef industry began.
My parents are first-generation farmers, and they originally came from Wagga, so southern New South Wales. That's where my dad's family had been, and most still in that area. And my mum was there, her family was there because her father was a teacher and travelled around, and that's where they met. Dad started working on farms, mum's a nurse. They leased and then bought a farm at Walker, and then we moved to Gunnedah late 70s, early 80s to a mixed farm, and that's where I largely grew up. And went to a ag boarding school in Tamworth, Farrah. And that's where my interest in cattle really got highlighted or entrenched. And it became an interest in cattle and meat. So livestock judging, cattle breeding became a real focus. And that's what led me into a trip to the US and learning about meat grading.
So it sounds like that by the time you'd finished high school, you were pretty sure that this was the field that you wanted to work in.
Absolutely, yeah. When we say this field, you know, it was cattle and livestock is what my focus was. And I was going to be a cattle producer, and that was very much the target and focus of what I wanted to do with my career. And it was that sort of transitioned after my first trip to the US.
So then a change, or a transition as you've called it, takes place, and you pivot from that desire to be a beef producer to a meat grader. So can you explain to us how that happened?
Well, I think one of the reasons why I've been so committed to meat judging and the intercollegiate meat judging program for so long is because I benefited from a similar program. So I won the National Angus Judging Competition when I was 20, and that got me a trip to the US, to the University of Illinois, where I got my first exposure to meat grading and meat judging, and spent quite a bit of time there with Dr. Carr in the meat science laboratory, and travelled a little bit with the meats judging team, and got a real passion for meat grading and meat judging, and that's where that all got started. So the trigger for that was the livestock judging and youth development system that the Angus Society and others were running at the time.
You were inspired by what you saw in the US, but did you immediately identify that there was a space in the Australian landscape for something similar?
Well, not initially. I didn't see it as a space to start with. I think I got really interested in what else we could do in livestock, or what else was possible, and learning about how other people did it in livestock and meat. I hadn't had a real focus on meat grading or the meat industry before I went. And I came home very excited about being a meat grader to discover that we didn't have a meat grading system, which is a bit career limiting. And that's when my passion sort of really, really kicked off, was seeing as an opportunity when I was in the US and enjoying that activity. And then coming back and seeing, there was a bit of a void here in Australia, and that then created the opportunity. So I had a passion for doing something which didn't necessarily exist. And luckily for me, there was a group of people that were very actively trying to resolve that anyway. So I could just link up with them. And one of them particularly I knew very well, Greg Chappell, John Carter, of course, the founder of ICMJ in Australia was also very passionate about it as well. So linking up with people like that then got me involved in not just meat judging, but also the meat grading program as well.
I'm wondering what the process was like when you came home and, you know, you assessed the situation that was currently, you know, happening in Australia after that tour of the US to where we are today, where we've got regular meat judging competitions and MSA. So what was the process, I suppose, from point A to point B?
Yeah, so I think we had two things happening in parallel. One was the development of the intercollegiate meat judging program, and the other was the development of the meat grading program. And meat judging started out of the New South Wales Meat Industry Authority, which John was the chairman of at the time. John Carter was the chairman of at the time. And they were desperately trying to put better description in of carcass and meat products. They were responsible for triggering the development of chiller assessment. Roy McDonald came out from the US to help the Meat Industry Authority, and he ended up helping set up the chiller assessment system with AusMeat as well. And part of the driver of that, setting up meat judging through that process, was John and Roy talking about the need for graduates and people to want to have a career in the meat side of the industry, which we had a real disconnect between, particularly graduates and the meat industry, and that was a big part of the driver in setting up the meat judging program and promoting meat industry careers to TAFE and tertiary students. So when I came back from the US, then I got involved with the meat judging program and with John Carter and Bob Gaydon at the time was one of the chief judges. And then separate to that, Greg Chappell, who was my ag teacher at high school and has been a lifelong mentor for me, I contacted him and said I'd decided what I was going to do with my career. I was going to be a meat grader, and he filled me in about there wasn't a meat grading system, and that started the conversation about, well, you know, why don't we set one up? And Chaps then introduced me to Rod Polkinghorne, and you know, we had the discussions about, you know, what we're going to do and how we're going to do it. And so in parallel, we had the development of the meat judging program that people like John Carter were driving, and the development of the meat grading program, which people like Chaps and Rod Polkinghorne were driving.
How long did it take for things to really start to take off here in Australia?
Judging program, it really evolved over time. So it was the, I think in 94 was the first team to go to the US, and that was the first big trigger. The 95 team that went to the US did more travel. We then, sort of the mid to late 90s, that we started doing the more expansive educational programs. So over that sort of 10-year period, the meat judging program really developed. So the 90s and the start of the 2000s, we had a sort of not unsimilar type of program to what we've got now, or what we would normally have now. On the meat grading side, there were some projects that were being run by the Australian Lot Feeders, Australian Lot Feeders Association, through a subsidiary of theirs called Australian Meat Standards, it was at the time. And they were running some research projects. And then in 1995 was when we actually started doing the Meat Research Corporation backed projects to test how we would actually set up and operate a meat grading system. So it was those next 5 or 6 years that we then set that system. The first 2 years, it sort of took us 2 years, 95, 96, 97, to get the system to a point where we're actually grading product and had it in store and in butcher shops. And it was originally launched in Brisbane. So it was really that 5 to 7 year period to get meat grading up and running, and sort of 10 year period for the real evolution of the meat judging program. So it was that 90s were the real critical period for making a big change in both of those.
Now, simultaneously, your career was bubbling along too. How did you complement what you were doing with meat judging and MSA with, you know, where you were heading professionally?
Yeah, so when I first came back from the US, I did a range of things. I worked in livestock and I sold cattle crushers and cattle handling equipment early on, which was a really good exposure to a whole range of the industry. I think I went from Launceston in Tasmania to Darwin, you know, in a 12-month period at, you know, trade shows and field days and shows, you know, so you get to see and understand the industry. But I did my Ausmeat Silver Assessment course and then actually did some Ausmeat Silver Assessment training, so on a contract basis for Ausmeat. And then it was, by the time I got to, you know, 95, I started working full-time on projects around the development of the meat grading system, so development of Meat Standards Australia, and then ended up running the grading operations, so the implementation of the system in the field, so the, you know, the operational side of selecting and training the graders and getting the plants set up. So that was sort of that 90s period as well.
Now, we know from looking at your resume that you had plenty on professionally. Did you find that it sort of went hand in hand with what you were trying to do with meat judging and MSA?
The back half of the 90s particularly, I had, you know, quite a lot going on. So we're setting up Meat Standards Australia. We're doing the meat judging program, which mostly included 3 weeks a year in the US for me, and, you know, a week around the competition. Towards the end of the 90s, I actually bought a cattle place at Gunnedah, and then similar sort of timing, or early 2000s, formed a company with a few other guys, and we opened up some butcher shops in Brisbane. So it was hard to tell what was extracurricular and what was just all linked in as part of what I was doing. So there was certainly a lot going on, and it was one of those situations where you don't sort of realise, I think, how much you really did have going on, because you just got in and got all of it done. But it was a pretty busy and exciting time.
There's been some obviously huge steps forward in eating quality of meat in Australia over, say, the last 20 years. How much of that do you put down to the work that you and others have done, you know, in the fields that we've been talking about today?
Well, I don't know that any of us individually should be taking or given individual credit. And it's easy to say, you know, there was this person or that person, but there was a group of people. But also we had industry support as well. So we had support from Meat Research Corporation and then MLA. But we also had a, you know, broader group of industry commercial supporters as well. So the group or the system or the program that was MSA or is MSA now and was the setup of MSA then, it's absolutely responsible for the quality of product that's now being produced in Australia for our consumers. Because when we started in Brisbane in 1995, we did a test where we bought 69 strip loins just randomly from retail around Brisbane, so now supermarkets and butchers, and ran them through a consumer test. Is this acceptable, yes or no? And half of them failed. So 50% of the product that you were buying in the mid-90s at a normal retail in Brisbane failed a basic acceptable test with a consumer. Now, you're flat out buying a piece of meat that isn't great. You'd have to search really hard to find, you know, a failed experience. And, you know, if someone does find one, it's like everybody hears about it. Whereas it was just part of the challenges for the industry back then. So we're in a massively different position now to what we were before 20 years ago or 25 years ago. And absolutely the development and implementation of not just the MSA system, but the science and processes and procedures that sit behind it is absolutely the driver of that change, no question.
And reflecting on that, you must feel, you know, I'm assuming, a tremendous amount of pride.
Absolutely, yeah, and it's something as an industry we should be really proud of, to be able to make that sort of difference. But it also makes you proud to be part of an industry that's been prepared to do that, and to have been able to be involved in that and that process in a somewhat influential way. And absolutely, it makes you very proud to do that. But what makes me really proud is to actually see the people that are now part of that system. So people that weren't born when I turned up back from the US and decided I wanted to be a meat grader to find out there was no meat grading system. To the people that we employed where their career didn't exist when they started uni, to now having people that are heading into effectively management roles in a nationwide program that contributed $172 million to Farmgate returns last year. And it's their career and a career they've been focused on for years. And they weren't even born when we got started. I mean, that's pretty cool to be able to see that, you know, we're now a generation into having a program that's delivering significant value for the industry and providing, you know, significant opportunity for people from a career point of view and getting them involved and excited about, you know, the meat and livestock industry.
And being there from the inception of all of these programs, including ICMJ, you must have seen some amazing young minds come through the program, and it must be really fulfilling to see those people now in those, I suppose, high-level roles within the various meat industries.
Absolutely it is. Yeah, absolutely it is. And to see the impact that they're having on a whole range of sectors in the industry, and you run through the meat judging alumni, and the sort of thing we've always talked about is this isn't just having everybody work in the meat industry, but it's having people in all sorts of careers across the meat and livestock industry and the associated industries that have a very strong commitment to and a really good understanding of what it takes and you know, how it operates. And when you look at the alumni out of the meat judging program, there's be very few, if any, industries or sectors across the supply chain where some of them aren't present, whether that be in production or processing or, you know, feedlotting, but also things like banking and livestock agents and, you know, all sorts of areas where yeah, we now have a much broader knowledge of the supply chain, and particularly of the meat side of the supply chain, which we didn't have 30 years ago. We didn't have the ability to give people an exposure to these sorts of things that they couldn't get unless they worked there.
What do you think are some of the common traits that successful people in this industry have?
Yeah, there's a few, and at its core, I think it's probably something like passion, and it's a passion for the industry, but it's also a passion for not necessarily making a difference. So we don't necessarily have people wanting to everybody wanting to invent new stuff, but it's a passion for doing good. And, you know, it's a passion for being impactful, and you can be impactful by doing something better or doing something very well. And I think that's a lot of what we see in so many people that come through these programs that then end up in influential roles is, you know, real commitment and passion about, you know, the industry and about doing well and having an impact. And that's great to see that, and it's great to see an opportunity where that there's opportunities for them to put that to good use.
So we've discussed your career up until, say, the late 90s, when we saw meat judging and MSA really take off. What was next for you, I suppose, professionally from that point?
So I did a couple of things. So I had, you know, commercial interest in cattle production and the butcher shops. And then when I left MSA, I took a role with a startup biotech company, and the attraction to it was similar to the attraction that got me really interested in meat grading. And it was about, you know, new technology. So the company was Genetic Solutions. It was founded by two ex-CSIRO scientists, and it was the first company in the world to commercialize a DNA test for livestock. And they had a license to the first gene markers that had been commercialized out of CSIRO. And that was the, you know, the foundation. That company, Genetic Solutions, was the foundation for genomic testing that we now see, you know, very broad scale across the industry. And Genetic Solutions merged with a company out of New Zealand called Catapult Systems to become Catapult Genetics. And then that was ultimately purchased by Pfizer, which became Pfizer Animal Genetics and is now you know, Zoetis Animal Genetics. So the Zoetis genomics program, you know, its original nucleus came from that biotech startup that was founded by those two CSIRO scientists. So I worked for Genetic Solutions and Catapult, and then for Pfizer. And that was a really exciting time, you know, with a new technology, a new product, something that was going to be, you know, additive and provide, you know, value and benefit to the industry. And so I had a sort of operational sales and marketing sort of leadership role, and did international business development. We set up an office in the US and set up an office in Europe, and we did, you know, work in South America. So it was a very exciting and fulfilling role. And then I left Pfizer and actually came back to MLA. And I spent a couple of years in Europe looking after Europe and Russia as the regional manager over there. And I was due to stay there a bit longer, but had an opportunity to come back and work for Australian Agricultural Company in a marketing role, which was a new role. And after not being there too long, so less than 12 months, an opportunity came up to compete for the managing director's role, which I then got. So I was a managing director at AACo for a few years, which was a fantastic opportunity to be running one of Australia's most iconic companies, but also a large meat or cattle and meat business. And during that period, we shifted very heavily into the branded beef program, and shifted into the or shifted further down the vertical integration path to, you know, majority of the revenue of the organisation coming from meat sales rather than livestock sales. So that was a pretty exciting time to be there. And then I spent a bit of time at Smithfield Feedlot. It's a family feedlot business, before coming back to MLA 18 months ago.
And I understand you also squeezed in somewhere there a degree from Harvard?
Yeah, when I left AACo, when you leave, you know, those CEO-type roles, you often have a, you know, sit-on-the-sideline period, which I had. So I had 6 months off after I left AACo. Gardening leave is the traditional term. You know, if you resign from those jobs, quite often you sit out your notice period, which I was happy to do at the time. And I thought I could put that time to good use. And one of the things I did was I did two stints in the US. Actually, I spent a month at the Kellogg Business School at Northwestern, just north of Chicago, and did a series of short courses there, executive scholar program, they call it. And then later during that period, there's an agribusiness course, and I did a finance course as well at Harvard, and it was a really beneficial, both those were really beneficial exercises, because you get, I suppose, later in your career when you're doing education, you get a lot more focused about things that you need. I think if you're honest with yourself, you get a bit more objective about what your challenges and shortcomings are. And the fantastic thing about those types of educational programs is you can be quite focused about the things that you want to learn. So they were really, you know, really good exercises, and I got a lot out of both those programs.
One of the things that strikes me about your whole career, right from that first trip to the US, excepting, of course, this sort of COVID time, travel has been a huge part of your professional life.
Yeah, it has been. Yep, travel's been a huge part of what I've done for 30 years. So, I enjoy travelling, but it's also been essential to get done what I've done, I think, and to learn the things that I wanted to, but also the opportunities I've had from a job point of view, you know, that they've had a lot of travel as well. And it can be taxing and challenging at times, but I actually really quite enjoy it. It's been nice spending 6 months without much travel too. We'll be back at it soon enough, I'm sure.
Let's hope so. Now, all of your travels, sort of literally and professionally, metaphorically, have led you to where you are now, and that's back with the MLA. It feels like a critical time to be in such a role. There's so much uncertainty in the world, generally, I suppose, and specifically within the meat industry in Australia. What do you think are the challenges that the industry will be facing over the next few years?
Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? So there are a lot of challenges in front of us, but I think we've got to really separate the immediate COVID challenges, which are really just disruption, and the bigger challenges. I think there's significant immediate short-term challenge and disruption. But long-term, our biggest challenge is going to be, or medium to long-term, our biggest challenge is going to be taking advantage of the opportunity that is presented to us now. And on the meat side, you know, from a red meat industry point of view, we have a fantastic opportunity in front of us, and particularly in Australia, where we've got a limited supply at the moment because we've got massive global demand, regardless of COVID. We've got a massive shortfall in global protein supplies, largely driven by African swine fever, but also exacerbated by the increase in demand through the rising affluence of the developing countries. And COVID's a blip, but it's a disruption blip. It's not it doesn't fundamentally shift the big macro drivers that are underpinning the opportunity in the red meat sector. And that compounds, the positive opportunity those compounds for us when we've got limited supply and increased domestic consumption off the back of the impact of COVID. So absolutely there's challenges at the moment, but they're largely just disruptive challenges. So difficulties around logistics or staff or movement or whatever it might be. There's also bigger challenges for us around supply, just availability of livestock. The flip side is massive opportunity for us. And the next 3 to 5 years, we should be seeing some of the best times that we've had in the red meat sector.
Well, that's a really exciting outlook and good news for those who are considering entering the industry. So what would your advice to those people be?
This has been pretty consistent from me for a while, but it's spend longer learning. There's a lot of opportunity, so I think it's very easy and exciting and tempting to jump into something straight away, and particularly something that might narrow our opportunity in a sector. But I would encourage people who have a real commitment to the red meat industry to learn for longer. So take roles that allow you to do multiple things. Take opportunities that allow you to experience a broader range of the supply chain. And if you're absolutely committed to being a cattle farmer or a feedlot operator or a truck driver or working a processing plant, it doesn't actually matter. But learn more about the other bits early, because you do get very focused and a bit restricted on how much flexibility you have the further you get into your career, whether that be because of location or family or company or career commitments, whatever it might be, but learn for longer, and that doesn't mean you've got to sign up to things for years. There's a lot of ways that we can do that in a shorter period of time, but get exposure to a lot of things. And the example I'd use would be selling cattle crushers. I sold cattle crushers and portable cattle yards and bits and pieces for a couple of years. My dad did it for 10 or 12 years, I think. And what they did was it exposed me to cattle production systems, like I say, from Darwin to Launceston. And I delivered pretty much everything that I sold. So I get a chance to go and drop off a cattle crusher, or a set of yards, or a calf cradle, and invariably the wife or partner or someone on site would give you a cup of tea, and they'd have a chat to you about what you'd been doing. And they'd be interested in talking, so I'd ask them about the cows, I'd ask them about their ideas and why they did things the way they did, and in a 12 or 18 month period, that probably taught me more about our production system across Australia than anything else I've done, and being able to see how people do things differently. So in those early years, you know, being open-minded to what people are doing and taking the time to understand a broader range of things sooner.
And Jason Strong, let's wrap up on this note. What's next for you?
It's interesting, isn't it? So I from a career point of view, I'm, as odd as this might sound, I'm not a what's next person. And when you look at the number of things I've done in my career, it probably looks like I've just been a coiled spring ready to bounce onto the next thing. But I've always been very focused on what I'm doing at the time. And every time I've shifted, it's been because there's an opportunity or a need or a significant impact or activity that's either allowed or caused me to think about making that shift. So the big focus for me at the moment with here at MLR is what can we do that's going to be impactful for the industry? And one of the reasons why I keep gravitating back to MLA is that having seen so much of our industry and so much of the supply chains, right across the whole sector, I have this really entrenched belief that we can absolutely do things better. And MLA is one of the best places where you can have an impact on that, or we can have an influence on that. So my focus is very much on how do we execute here. So how do we put in place the things that we've been working on, that we've been planning, that we're investing in, so that they can be impactful for the industry? How do we invest in research and development on behalf of the industry that are going to generate ways or mechanisms or things that allow our stakeholders to create and capture more value?
This podcast is an initiative of the Australian Intercollegiate Meat Judging Association to showcase the career paths within the meat processing industry. ICMJ is a not-for-profit association which aims to provide opportunities for students to learn, building the pool of intelligent young meat industry representatives into the future. ICMJ does this through a series of events across Australia and overseas. For more information, head to the website icmj.com.au.